from Oregon?
Oregon, correct? Originally, yeah.
You're from Oregon? Yep. Okay, so you just spent some time in Chicago.
Yeah, I had a pit stop in my career, basically, in Chicago. It was wonderful.
Pat, you're not far from Chicago, right? You up north boys there?
Suburbs, yeah. I mean, it's like 35 miles probably, but technically a suburb. don't get down as often as I'd like, but yeah, it's nice, man, because like still close to Wisconsin where I'm from, being here in the northwest suburbs, but you know, still can get down to the city now and again. My dad lives downtown still, and great eating and drinking, obviously. It is an awesome city, man.
And see, and that's the thing, though. When you get up to our age and you're as busy with all the Dynasty Fantasy Football stuff, you don't have time to go to the city all the time, right?
Exactly.
All right. What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Diehards. Today, I am joined by my co-host, the bearded Viking, John Helmkamp, and we have a special guest, folks. It is Pat Fitzmaurice from Fantasy Pros. You know him as @FF_FF on Twitter. I don't know how I got that wrong, Pat. I just don't know. I think it's just I just see your name these days. I don't have to worry about your handle. You just pop up everywhere. Pat, thanks so much for joining us. Today on the show, we are going to talk some of our favorite Dynasty risers, which we are really excited to get to you guys. These are players that we think you should be going after in your Dynasty leagues, guys that could make a difference that maybe aren't getting the love they should be getting. Let's get into it here real quick, first with some news and notes. Well, first, Pat, I was so excited about all of this and having you on the show. I forgot to ask you, how are you doing today, my friend?
Doing well.
Pat's frozen.
Buddy, thanks. And yes. Thanks to you and John. And yeah.
Oh, well, any opportunity I can have that, to have.
Doing well. Nice.
Oh, Fitz over here with
thanks,
some tech
buddy.
Issues.
And like. Sorry, apparently my. Here, let me leave and come back real quick.
All right, Pat. All right. Okay. We'll go to the chat real quick. We have got our boy Brad Bolt in the chat saying, hello, John, Nate, and Pat. Hopefully Pat will be back. You know, I get the tech issues, John. I think I told you yesterday I didn't have internet all day. It would come back for 5 minutes, then we'd lose it again. It would come back for 5 minutes, we'd lose it again. Technology.
That's the worst, dude. Like, that's more annoying to me than if they just told you you're not going to have internet for 24 hours. I'd be like, okay, cool. 24 hours, I know that I don't have it. If you just keep trying like every 5 to 10 minutes and then it cuts out, you're just like being strung along and can't get anything accomplished for the entire day. That'd be the worst.
Oh, yeah. Right when you think it's back, it's gone. And look who is back. It's Pat.
Nice, speaking of.
Sorry about that, guys.
It's all right. It happens. I was just telling John, our internet was going in and out every 5 minutes yesterday at the house. So we bailed and went for a hike because we couldn't get anything done. Now, guys, let's get into it here in the news and notes section. The first thing I wanted to bring up is the Antonio Gibson comments from Ron Rivera. Now, people are having kind of a crazy reaction to him saying he thinks he can play a key role in the offense and he wants to see him more involved in 2023. We've heard this before from Rivera. Is there anything to this? Or, I mean, is Gibson that RB42 where he's ranked right now? Pat, what do you think about this?
Oh, man. Yeah, nice of Ron Rivera to notice that Antonio Gibson was on the roster after, you know, last year, a little disappointing. I don't know. I mean, I guess Gibson still had like 899 total yards from scrimmage, but a letdown from the previous 2 years. I mean, here's a guy who is at 6 feet and 228 pounds and with a 4.39 40 time, as big and as fast as Jonathan Taylor. And he's a converted college wide receiver, so we know he can catch passes. He's capable of doing that. So obviously a lot to like here, having scored double-digit touchdowns his first 2 years in the league. But, you know, he fumbled a lot in 2021. Seems like maybe that was held against him with the drafting of Brian Robinson last year. And once Robinson was fully recovered from those gunshot wounds, he was maybe, I don't know, not maybe a majority of the backfield, but a plurality of the work last year. So I don't know, man. Like, I want to buy into this. Like, I've got Antonio Gibson on some dynasty league teams. I want to be enthusiastic that Rivera will, in fact, give him the work he deserves. I'm not sure about it, though. I'm sort of torn here. You know, I did just put in a trade offer for him in one league. You know, trying to, there's a guy who's interested in Kadarius Toney, and I, like, you know, basically a Toney Gibson exchange with an upgrade from me at tight end. And, you know, like, I thought it was a pretty fair offer. We'll see if it happens. Yeah, I'm cautiously bullish, I guess you could say.
Now, that's a trade I would make. I think that that's good value on both sides for a team that maybe needs a wide receiver, and you get to upgrade at tight end. Now, here's what's gotten me kind of excited, is that the team let J.D. McKissic go. John, is there anything to that? Do you think that that's them showing, like, hey, we know this guy had 110 targets in 2020, but we believe that Gibson could be that guy for us, that pass-catching back for the Commanders?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of feeling similarly to what Pat described. Cautiously bullish, I think, was the term. I kind of feel the same way. I don't want to go down the whole rabbit hole of last offseason where Rivera was like, I think he can be my CMC. And everyone was like, oh my God, you should project him for 2,000 yards. Like, I don't want to – let's not do that. Like, come on. Let's not get carried away. But I do think there's something to the McKissic departure. I think that they know that he can catch the ball. I know that they're entering this year without an experienced quarterback. So giving your quarterback check down opportunities, easy completions, just get the ball to playmakers in space and let them go get the yards for you instead of asking Sam Howell to jump in and be subjected to the New York Giants defense, for example, or the Eagles defense, for example, in that division. All three defenses in that division are very strong. So give him easy completions, give him opportunities to get the ball to the playmakers and let them do the work. So yeah, I do think that Antonio Gibson probably is a value right now. I'm not jumping up and down and saying he's going to be an RB1, but I do think that he can give you a lot more production than how he's currently being valued. Sure.
Okay. So now, Pat, who leads the Commanders in rushing yards this season? Is it Antonio Gibson or is it Brian Robinson?
Man, if I had to put a bet down, I would probably still pick Robinson, as much as I hate to admit it. And, like, that's the other thing. I mean, John mentioned the McKissic thing, and I wish it was like, so I think the McKissic thing was related to some sort of injury, either a neck or spinal thing, and I can't remember which. And, like, I'd feel better about Gibson's possible role in 2023 if it wasn't injury related, if they were just kicking McKissic to the curb, like, okay, he's limited, he can't do anything for us on early downs, you know, and Gibson can be our pass catcher. But it was sort of like, you know, they were forced to part ways with McKissic. So I don't know. But yeah, if I had to put a bet down, I guess I'd probably reluctantly still bet Robinson.
I think the only thing that I'll say to add to that is that they weren't aggressive in adding anybody to the room either.
Right.
They drafted Chris Rodriguez in the sixth round, but, like, that's it. That's really all that they did. So it's not like they went out and intentionally sought out some pass catching back to fill that third down role. I think they like what they have in that duo. I think that's going to be a 1-2 punch. I think Brian Robinson is your short yardage guy and gets more rushing opportunities. And Antonio Gibson, I think he's the lightning, so to speak. And I think he's going to see some more passing work than what we saw from him last year, as long as he's healthy. So yeah, cautiously bullish, I think is a good way to say it.
Yep. And I think that's where I stand on him as well. Like, I'm not expecting him to light the world on fire, but I understand there's a chance he could be an RB2 tier player in 2023. I don't think that's out of the question. So now the next player I'm going to move on to, we've seen this guy go off. We have seen him look like a Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver. And this week, Saints GM Mickey Loomis, speaking about Michael Thomas, said he thinks he can still be a 100-plus catch receiver in the NFL. Now, Pat, I see your smirk, so I want to hear your thoughts on this first, because he's going to be 30. He's 30 years old heading into the season. He hasn't played a full season since 2019. He's been known to be an issue in the locker room. Is this just Loomis trying to pump up his trade value, Or do they really truly believe this guy is 100-plus reception wide receiver with Derek Carr at quarterback?
Yeah, it does seem like this is idle chatter, Nate. And, like, maybe he could have been if all things had broken right and his health had cooperated. Maybe he could have been a 100-catch guy this year. But there's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Chris Olave. Like, he is the alpha guy there. You know, like I think he's better than Michael Thomas right now. I think most people probably believe that. You know, like Olave is this fast, great route runner, probably already one of the better route runners in the NFL. Like, just this guy is a rocket ship for fantasy purposes. Like, he's just getting going after an impressive rookie year. And like, if they get something from Thomas, that's great. I mean, it's a nice bonus. They have Rashid Shaheed there, who was a pleasant surprise last year, you know, who can also help out. But, yeah, I'm not buying the 100-catch outlook for Michael Thomas. And just I'm also not buying that he can stay healthy because he's had so many foot issues.
John, what about you? Is this a 100-catch receiver in 2023?
He was a 100-catch receiver in past tense. I don't. If I don't want to be one of the, oh man, my neck just popped like four times. That felt great. Oh, I've been waiting on that for like a week. That was awesome. I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, if he gets 100 receptions, I will eat a jar of mayonnaise. And like, I'm not doing that crap, but I just don't see that being a possibility. I don't think there's any chance that he stays healthy for an entire season. I think you have 100 reception wide receiver there in Chris Olave, like Pat mentioned. I don't think there's going to be enough to go around for both of them to top 100. I don't see it. And if you are still one of the select few that's holding out hope for Michael Thomas actually being something, and he's been eating a hole on your dynasty roster for the last like 3 years and you still have him. If he comes out of the gate healthy and has one or two really good games, trade him for whatever you can get. Sell high on him the second that he produces, because I don't see it happening where he's able to sustain it over the course of an entire season. And to me, he's a sinking ship in dynasty, and I'm like a rat scurrying off the barge as fast as possible if he does anything well.
I love that analogy. I love the rat analogy. Yeah, I was out on Michael Thomas 2 years ago when we started to see the attitude problems, and like, it didn't seem like he was trying to come back from these injuries as quickly as he could have, which I'm not in the trainer's room. I am notably not a doctor, so who knows? I just have a hard time when these ankle injuries stack up, you don't heal as quickly. And you're more, I know from experience from my own ankle injuries, now I'm more prone to hurting that ankle no matter how hard I rehab it or how good a shape I'm in. I can't see him playing a full season. I don't think he even has 50 catches in 2023. Yeah. I'd be surprised to see him get to that 50 catch mark. I wouldn't do anything crazy if he does it. Like, I'm not going to shave my head if he gets to 50 catches. To your
that's not a far leap for you, buddy. Like, I love you, but
hey,
shaving your head is like, oh look, I brushed my cheek this morning. Like,
now I will have you know, sir, underneath this hat, I have luscious long locks that cover up most of the bald spots in the front of my head. I would just end up looking like my dad, which
you would actually just be doing your wife a favor if you did.
No, she hates me with short hair. So I guess maybe I would be doing her a favor, right? All right, guys. So let's move on to our next segment here. We want to get into some dynasty risers. And Fitz, I kind of want to start with you because I really like the two guys you're bringing to the table. One specifically I had mentioned before the show, I almost thought about bringing to the table.
Yeah, I'll mention that guy, Cam Akers. And it finished strong last year. So from week 13 on, he was the running back 4, I believe, in PPR scoring. And, you know, that was quite a contrast to the year he had. Like, I was kind of pumping him up preseason last year. And then they have that Thursday night opener where he's like sitting on the bench and Daryl Henderson is like playing all the snaps. And I'm like, oh no. I got this one really wrong. It's pretty bad when you find out right away in the Thursday night season opener that you got something that wrong. It's just like, okay, it's going to be one of those kind of years, I see. And then like, man, later on in the year, he was sort of estranged from the team. It looked like he and McVay had this falling out that was p- potentially irreparable. Well, luckily they had some sort of reconciliation. He comes back and he sort of was the guy from week 13 on who I had hoped he'd be all season. So I'm wondering if maybe there wasn't some residual issue with Akers and the torn Achilles that he sustained in training camp in July of 2021. And he makes that miraculous comeback and he comes back for the playoffs or like just before the playoffs. And the Rams basically hand him the key to the backfield for their Super Bowl run. Like, here, you're our guy now. So like, you know, he didn't do well in those playoff games and possibly lost some burst from that injury. But we thought like after that, oh, he's going to be good to go for 2022. It's such a devastating injury that maybe he wasn't like all the way back last year, but optimistically, maybe he could be all the way back this year. And as far as competition in the Rams backfield, I mean, there's Kyren Williams who, you know, ran the 40, they timed him with a sundial, I think at the 2021 combine, like maybe he's their pass catching guy, but third down backs who run a 4.7 generally don't stick in that role for very long. Then there's Zach Evans, and it's funny, like I've heard a lot of people mention the possibility that Zach Evans could steal the job from Cam Akers. Zach Evans just lost his job in his last year at Ole Miss to a freshman who was a three-star recruit, and Quinshon
Judkins, write the name down. Yes. Save that name.
And admittedly, when I mentioned the three-star recruit, John, I know you're a big Devy guy. You know, like that does not do Quinshon justice because he will eventually be sought after.
Oh, he's a stud.
Dynasty guy. Yeah. But like, you know, is he really going to beat out Cam Akers if he's losing his gig to a freshman? I'm pretty skeptical.
Well, then Condre Miller in his first season after Zach Evans leaves TCU puts up better stats at TCU than Zach Evans did. So it's just, there's both of those scenarios, and everyone, the Devy shine on Zach Evans was so bright that everyone has been pumping him up for 3 years, even though he never lived up to his hype coming out of high school. So I'm with you. I don't think that he comes in and steals Cam Akers' job. Is he going to contribute in that offense? Yeah, possibly. I think that he can come in and earn himself a role, but Cam Akers knows the Sean McVay playbook. He has the, you know, leg up in that regard. And I think he's a more well-rounded back than Zach Evans is. Zach Evans is pretty fast in a straight line, but he lacks some polish on his game. So I agree with you. I think that Cam Akers is probably the guy to own in that backfield. Yeah, I don't really think anyone's going to be a massive threat to his workload in LA.
Well, I think realistically, the only person who's a threat to is probably Kyren Williams, right? Like, and if he's even a threat to him, I really like this because something you said, Fitz, he wasn't 100% when he started the season last season. You know, these guys coming off of that devastating Achilles injury, it takes them time to get their burst back. And we saw that, I think, with Akers at the beginning of last season. But now we saw what Deontay Foreman did in year two after his, and he looked phenomenal in Carolina. So I like this a lot. I think he's going to finish a lot higher than most people expect. And, I mean, you're not having to pay up to get Cam Akers right now.
Yeah. I think right now in the dynasty landscape, running back is just such a weird position. Like, no one wants to trade for any running back right now because everyone feels like they don't know what's going to happen. It's like if you're not getting Bijan Robinson or Jahmyr Gibbs, everyone's like, I'm not really interested in giving up assets for a running back. So it's weird. I think you could probably go out and get Cam Akers for a second, don't you? Like, do you think that would probably get it done?
I was just going to say, like, if you're doing it for draft picks, I think for 2024 second, you could probably do it.
You know? Yeah, and I do that. I would do that instantly. I think that would make a lot of sense and improve your roster right away.
All right, John. So now I want to go to one of your players here, a running back you think is going to improve a roster. And again, I've been banging the table for this guy since he was at Oklahoma. But why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. Ramondre Stevenson, I don't think is getting enough love. Last year, it was a really weird backfield split with him and Damian Harris. They were like exactly 50-50 in a lot of regards. But Ramondre Stevenson ended up winning out that backfield and running away with it. He ended up finishing the season with the fourth most receptions of any running back. And I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to that. They think of him as like this big bruising back, not a well-rounded guy that can also catch a lot of passes. Like what we were talking about with Antonio Gibson in Washington, suspect quarterback play, give the ball to playmakers and give your quarterback a lot of check down opportunities. I think that's what we saw with Mac Jones. And I think we're going to continue to see that in New England. And then Damian Harris leaves, goes to Buffalo. And now Ramondre basically has sole possession of that backfield. Like, there's no one else that's really going to be much of a threat on that roster to his workload. They didn't add anybody of note, even though, even though there was a lot of chatter about them possibly looking at Bijan in the first round if he was available, or looking to really add a good running back threat in a deep running back class, and then they didn't. So I think this is Ramondre's backfield. I think that he has really high PPR value. I think he's going to contribute in a ton of ways, and he finished last season, I wrote it down in the notes here, as the RB7 in PPR while only scoring 5 touchdowns on the ground. He added 1 through the air. So he had a really high finish without a ton of touchdown volume. That's pretty sticky. If he's able to up that at all, or even just sustain what he did last year, he could easily be an RB1 again, and no one's treating him like that. So I think that he's a value. I think he's another one of those running backs that you can go out and acquire. It's going to cost you more than a second to get Ramondre, but he's a younger running back with very little competition, and there's not many backfields that aren't split these days. So I think he's one of the like true kind of bell cow guys. He could lead the league in running back touches this year, and it wouldn't surprise me if he was like top 5 to 10 in total touches at the running back position.
So Fitz, first of all, are you on board with Ramondre here? And second follow-up question, what would you be willing to trade to get Ramondre on a team where you have need at running back?
Oh, man. All right. First of all, I am totally on board with Ramondre. And Nate, you mentioned, that he's from Oklahoma. And that's when I fell for him, was when he just trampled Florida in, Sugar Bowl. I can't remember which bowl game it was. But, oh, my gosh. I mean, seeing a guy that big with his feet, like he's got special feet, like for a big dude. Same with Jonathan Taylor. When you see a big dude who's got like those super quick feet, I just get so excited about those guys. And, probably anyone watching this show who's under 30 is thinking like, oh, Bill Belichick never commits to a single running back or whatever. But, maybe they're not familiar with the Corey Dillon era in New England when like he's got his guy. He's perfectly willing to commit to him if he's like a special guy, and maybe Ramondre is in fact that special guy. It's encouraging that Ramondre, for a guy who's built the way he is, can actually catch passes.
Yeah.
He's a good receiver, and like his, the targets he earns on the number of routes he runs, the percentage is really good. I can't think of the number off the top of my head. I'm excited about him. What would I be willing to trade for him? I don't know if I'd go so far as to give up a 2024 first for him, but man, like I'd be willing to give up like a pretty decent wide receiver, man. Terry McLaurin or Ramondre? Who would you rather have? Is that in the ballpark?
Ooh, yeah, I think so.
I think it's in the ballpark.
I think that's a good name to throw out there. I think that's an interesting conversation. It's certainly making me think about it. It's not a slam dunk on either side for me. I'd have to really kind of ponder that one.
Yeah,
if I needed a running back, I think I would do that trade.
I know generally people, running backs are like, they're hard to trade away, hard to get quality wide receivers, and receivers maintain their trade value so well, and running backs generally are, it's fleeting. Their value is fleeting. But like, I think McLaurin is at least in the ballpark. And I think if you offer the Ramondre holder Terry McLaurin, they'd have to think pretty hard about it.
If I'm in need of a running back, that is, I think, Fitz, I think that's a trade that I take. I love Ramondre Stevenson. And I love your point about Corey Dillon, because there are a lot of people that don't remember those Belichick offenses. And I think it should be noted too, you guys, they have an offensive coordinator this year. They got Bill O'Brien back in the building. And his offenses in New England were always very good offenses. And I think we're going to see guys like Mac Jones, even by midseason, kind of trending up in dynasty, where these guys are becoming more, more wanted. Managers want these guys. They want to bring them in. Now, the guy I wanted to bring to the table, it just turns out we're going basically 3 running backs, 3 wide receivers. It's how the chips fell. So I'm going to go with my running back. I'm coming to the table with Rashad White in Tampa Bay. I don't know why this is even a discussion at this point. They didn't address anything in free agency other than bringing in Chase Edmonds, who has been a journeyman guy who is really nothing but a change of pace back. Unless you think Keyshawn Vaughn is suddenly going to like jump onto the scene, Rashad White's the guy in Tampa Bay and on a team that's going to need him to be the guy. Because if they're going with Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield, they're going to have to run the ball and utilize those short routes effectively if they want to have any chance, even in a pretty crappy division. And at the end of the season, weeks 12 through 17, he was running back 16. That was after not getting a whole ton of work and sharing a backfield with Leonard Fournette, who saw a lot of volume, but we saw him catch 90% of his targets. And this is the biggest one for me because now most formats are PPR. He caught, 54 of 60 targets last season. What more do you want?
What I'm hearing is that all three of us like bigger running backs that can catch on offenses that rely on them.
Exactly. And that's exactly what Rashad White is. And I'm sorry, Aaron Stewart. I know that you hate Rashad White, but you were going to be so wrong on this. Again, Chase Edmonds is his biggest competition for touches. So, and he does it in the air. Pat, am I crazy?
No. And think about like some of the running backs who didn't fire in Tampa, people we were excited about at one time or another, Ronald Jones, Keyshawn Vaughn. And the issue with these guys were that they had some deficiencies in the passing game, either as pass catchers or pass blockers or both. And the one thing we kind of heard about Rashad White coming into the NFL ranks was that, you know, he was good in both of those areas as a pass catcher and could actually block. And you know the Buccaneers were not going to play anyone who was a liability and could get Tom Brady killed, basically. You know, you've got a guy who can't move back there. You need a running back who can block as the last line of defense. And, you know, White did that and, like, consistently earned playing time and basically pulled into an even 50-50 situation with Leonard Fournette. And so, you know, now no more Fournette, or so we hope that they don't re-sign him. No significant additions in the draft. They didn't draft a running back, but they did sign Sean Tucker as a UDFA. But, you know, we're not going to consider a UDFA a serious threat.
Right.
Especially when, you know, I don't know. I don't think Tucker has anywhere near the all-around skill set that Rashad White has. So, yeah, I'm really on board with this one, Nate.
John, are you going to tell me I'm stupid? Or are you actually going to roll with me on this one?
Well, I mean, the two statements are, you know, not mutually exclusive.
Well, thanks, buddy.
But you're welcome. No, I love you. No, I like it. I think Rashad White is the guy there. I will say the Sean Tucker hype, there's a lot of it out in these dynasty streets right now. And I like Tucker a lot. If it wasn't for the heart issue that saw him fall during the draft, I thought that he should have been a round three, round four guy. And for him to just not get drafted because of that heart issue, if he is cleared, he is a super explosive guy. I will say that White has earned his role. He's a good pass catcher. He's a really good pass blocker, like Pat said. I loved Rashad White at Arizona State. He was super dynamic. I wouldn't be all that surprised to see Sean Tucker get a role in this offense. But again, there's very, very few offenses that just have one running back that sees the field. It doesn't happen. Like, you, other than Derrick Henry, you basically have offenses deploying multiple running backs. So I think it's Rashad White's majority backfield, and that's really all you're looking for, especially someone that can also add in the passing game. And I think that that's what Rashad White offers. So, yeah, again, another big back with good feet who is a well-rounded player who can catch at a high clip. That's a good running back to have in Dynasty.
Well, okay, so we're talking so much about pass catching now. John, I'm going to let you kick us off here with your rising wide receiver because I'm with you. I just have concerns. So maybe you can change my mind.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I'm going to bring up Garrett Wilson, and it's hard to call him a riser because he had a dynamic rookie season and everyone's in love with him, and it's all great. But to me, I think that long-term in Dynasty, you're looking at an elite asset. I don't know if he's going to get you like elite production this year. He might. It's possible that we see that with Aaron Rodgers under quarterback. But I think what we've seen out of him, the type of prospect that he was, the absolutely dynamic playmaker, the great speed, the great route running, the contested catchability, he checks every box that I want in a wide receiver. Comes out of Ohio State. He's part of that wide receiver factory that Brian Hartline's been pumping out up there lately of just dominant wide receiver after dominant wide receiver. And guess what? There's two more coming next year in Marvin Harrison Jr. and Amika Egbuka. You got two more great wide receivers that are probably going to be first-round draft picks. So get familiar with Brian Hartline and what he's doing up there at Ohio State. Just got promoted to offensive coordinator, too. Just got attacked by a bug. But Garrett Wilson is just a dynamic wide receiver. And he did it last year with just crap quarterback play. He had nothing. They were rotating through guys, Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, Mike White. And he still comes out and posts an 88-catch, 1,100-yard season with only four touchdowns. And he was still a back-end wide receiver, too, with that kind of production. He's such a dominant wide receiver, in my opinion, that was his floor production. With the quarterback play that we saw out of the Jets, with the lack of touchdowns that he scored in his rookie season, a back-end wide receiver, too, is, in my opinion, his floor. And I think that he could take a year to jump that puts him into wide receiver one territory quite easily in terms of this year's production, with a dynasty ceiling of emerging into one of the top-tier guys in the game.
All right, now, Pat, let me ask you this, because I know this is what everybody's concerned about. They brought half of the Green Bay receiving core to New York. Do you think Lazard kind of dings Wilson's value this season and possibly next season if Rodgers sticks around? Or is it like what most of us have been saying, where Lazard's the dirty work guy and Wilson's kind of the flash guy?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, I think Lazard's just a guy. And he is a big body, so like it's possible he gets some looks in the end zone and maybe steals a touchdown or two from Garrett Wilson. But he is really just a guy and like is no match for Garrett Wilson's skill set. And really, I mean, I don't have too much to add to what John said. I pretty much agree with everything. Like, it's funny because the Ohio State offense has been so dominant the last couple of years. Like, it makes it hard to evaluate some of the individual pieces. And so, like, in my dynasty rookie drafts last year, I just kind of wasn't in position in most of them to get Wilson. Like, he was going at a spot in the draft where, like, I was kind of either on either end of the first round, and Wilson was kind of going like sort of in the middle, I think, if I recall correctly, like 107, 108 typically.
Yeah. Basically what Jaxon Smith-Njigba is doing this year, essentially. Yeah. Like they were both going right in the middle of the first round.
And in redraft, I was sort of off him early. And then it like late my last few drafts, I'm like, I should really get some of Garrett Wilson in case this guy turns out to be like really good. And like, you know, what I was seeing in college was very true, and it wasn't just the Ohio State offense being a machine, and I was really glad I kind of got those late redraft shares. I mean, like, the only reservation I have about Garrett Wilson this year is that the last time that Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett were together, they played at like the slowest pace in the NFL. They were like 32nd in average time between offensive snaps. Like, that's the only concern. And the fact that the Jets defense is so good, you know, I don't expect a lot of negative game script. So probably not a lot of 300-yard games for Aaron Rodgers, probably not a lot of shootouts that the Jets are going to be involved in this year. That's about it. But I do expect Garrett Wilson to have an enormous target share on that team.
Yeah, you guys said everything I would have said about this. So Fitz, I want to let you finish the show because I love your wide receiver. And I think this is someone people aren't talking about necessarily enough. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to get into mine here real quick. It's Jerry Jeudy, who right now on Fantasy Pros is the expert consensus ranked wide receiver 25. And I understand it because we haven't seen a ton out of Jeudy looking through some stats today. However, I think this is a guy who could be a wide receiver one tier player in 2023. Based on what we saw him do the back half of last season, once the team got rid of Nathaniel Hackett, they moved him mostly outside. He had been playing mostly in the slot before then, and it changed the way that he played. It changed the way that Russell Wilson used him those last 5-6 weeks. He was a wide receiver 9 to finish out the season once Hackett was gone. Now they've gone out and they got Marvin Mims. I think he's going to see a lot of slot snaps if KJ Hamler isn't healthy. And yes, John, we are in agreement here. But that what that does, this allows his team to push Judy outside and probably work a combination of Tim Patrick and Courtland Sutton on the other side, because simply Courtland Sutton just isn't that guy, right? We had one phenomenal season from him. In the last two seasons, he's been wide receiver 44 and wide receiver 43 in PPR. This is a team with a new offense, a new coach, a new feeling. Russell Wilson, no more let's ride energy out of this team. God. Like, it's finally I know, man. Imagine living here.
I'm so sorry.
Nonstop. It was so terrible. But I think this is a team that's going to rebound. And if they're going to rebound, especially with the Javonte Williams situation where they're saying, well, he's going to be ready for camp. Yeah, but so was J.K. Dobbins last season. And we didn't see Dobbins until what, week 8? I think that's similar with Javonte Williams. This is a team that's going to need their wide receivers to perform the first part of the season until they get a somewhat healthy Javonte back. Because unless they go out and get either Fournette or Ezekiel Elliott, then they're rolling with Samaje Perine. And while I love the talent and I have kind of hoarded a little bit of Perine in Dynasty, I think Judy's going to be the alpha in this offense, at least for the first 8 to 9 weeks. And once he shows that role, this is a guy that I really think could be a top 5 fantasy wide receiver in 2023. Now, Pat, tell me why I'm wrong.
All right. If you are wrong, Nate, what would be wrong would be the possibility that Russell Wilson is just not the same guy anymore, that, he's lost the mobility, I think, and the escapability that made him so special. Like, you know, I'm a University of Wisconsin grad, and when he was there for his year there, like, he had this incredible spin move to get away from, guys barreling down on him off the edge. And he did that. Yes. I mean, like, whichever way he wanted to spin, he had, like, such a tight little spin move. Then all of a sudden he's on the run. He doesn't have any pass rushers around. He's buying time for his guys to get open downfield, and he was so dangerous. We saw that in Seattle for most of his career there. I just worry that he doesn't have that same sort of escapability, and I don't know if he can, like, pick defenses apart from the pocket. Plus, you've got Mims coming in, and, you know, I've heard Sean Payton talk glowingly about Mims, and I like him a lot, too. I mean, the guy was a playmaker. Obviously, John likes him a lot. And, you know, even Tim Patrick returning. So I just worry this could be sort of a committee approach to pass catching. But I do think Jerry Jeudy is the most talented guy here, Nate. I'm not going to dispute that at all. I mean, last year, a couple of my fantasy pros colleagues were really honking their horns for Courtland Sutton. And I'm like, are you guys sure that Courtland Sutton is the best guy in this wide receiver core? Because I'm not totally convinced he is. And it turned out he probably was not. So, I mean, I love Jeudy. Like, he's undeniably good at running routes and getting open and picking up yards after the catch. Like, that's where he wins at the NFL level. No question about it. So really high on him, just not totally sold on the situation.
Unrelated but related, just because I want to talk about this Denver offense for 1 second, since we still have a little bit of time. Sean Payton has always had a, like, dynamic pass-catching back. Always. It was Reggie Bush, and he had Alvin Kamara. He always had someone to fill that role. Who is that in Denver? Samaje Perine. Like, he's not that guy. They don't have a running back like that on the roster at all. Like, I'm like, did I miss something? So I'm looking through things on their depth chart right now, and I'm like,
Tyler Beatty?
Jones. Yeah, Tyler Beatty, maybe. Like,
I like Tyler Beatty, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Beatty might, maybe that, but I don't think that he's a guy that's, you know, a dominant playmaker out of the backfield. It's just, I'm very curious what this offense is going to look like under Sean Payton when he doesn't have a running back duo to rely on, an explosive playmaking one and a thumper of a running back, because he always deployed that. He had Deuce McAllister back with Reggie Bush, and then he had Mark Ingram with Alvin Kamara. It's like, I feel like we're a year away from Sean Payton getting his offense right in Denver. I guess I feel like over the next cycle, he's going to be like, all right, cool, that was great, but now I need that pass catching running back in here as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. But if anyone can help Russell Wilson be a pocket passer, it's Sean Payton. I mean, he worked with Drew Brees, and he's, you know, arguably the best pocket passer ever, let alone a guy that's a shorter quarterback. So yeah, I'm very curious to see what this offense is going to look like. I do think Jerry Jeudy offers a world of upside if Wilson can get it lined up. Like if he's back to performing at least well, let alone being an elite quarterback, but if he's just performing well, then I think Jerry Jeudy can eat a lot in this offense.
Man, I love that John is bringing this up, but I also hate John for bringing it up because this is like the tortured topic that I've been having. Like, I want to fade injury optimism, and that kind of makes me not want to buy into Javonte Williams, especially coming off a multi-ligament knee tear. Like, those multi-ligament tears are so hard. And now we're getting this positive news that is maybe going to start to move the needle and push him back up as far as ADP. But, like, man, if Javonte actually is healthy, like, could he be that guy who, yeah, maybe, like, they have Samaje Perine take some of the early down work. But if he's in that Kamara role where he's getting, like, you know, okay, 180 or 190 carries and you know, managing it where he gets 10 or 12 a game, but he's the primary passing down back. I mean, that could be such a valuable role. I just hate having to embrace the injury optimism that I'm not fully buying into for a guy coming off an injury of that magnitude.
I know. And I think early in the season, I think we see more of the wide receivers. I think the more that Javonte works back in, maybe we see some of those targets get redistributed throughout that offense a little bit. But I think early in the year in particular, I think Jerry Jeudy could have just a ridiculously high target share, which honestly might go a long way to him building his rapport with Wilson and therefore earning a higher target share in the back half of the season. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to need him early because they're not going to have much else. So, and Marvin Mims is still a rookie and he's going to be adjusting to the NFL. So I think Jeudy is going to be the dude early in the season in particular for Russell Wilson to have to latch onto. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Well, I think he almost has to be at this point because, yeah. I mean, Tim Patrick. Now, I love Tim Patrick, right? And I think Tim Patrick could be a huge part of this offense. But they just started to develop that rapport at the end of last season. We saw it in the back half of the season. And I think that as they work on it through camp, yeah, he's going to lean on Jerry Jeudy. He's absolutely going to lean on Jerry Jeudy without Javonte Williams because who else is he going to lean on? Greg Dulcich? Yeah. Probably not. I mean – Adam Trautman, probably not. Trautman's a blocking tight end. That's why they brought him in. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in Denver. It's so many changes with this team over the last two seasons. For a Denver Broncos fan, someone who lives here, it's almost too much for my heart to handle at this point. Like, if it doesn't work out this season, I just have to find a new team, you know? I don't know what else to do. All right, so Pat, I want you to finish us off here. I really love this wide receiver you're bringing to the table. Just a guy I think is going to pop off.
Yeah, it's Jahan Dotson. And, you know, I was lucky enough to get him in a couple of rookie drafts last year, mainly because people were moving Sky Moore ahead of him, even though Jahan Dotson was a mid first round pick and Sky Moore was like a mid to late second round pick. You know, but people obviously love the landing spot for Sky Moore with the Chiefs, not that thrilled about the landing spot with Jahan Dotson with the Commanders. But man, I really like Dotson. Like, I'm a Big Ten guy. I live in the Midwest. You know, I loved what I saw from Dotson at Penn State. And then he comes in, only played 12 games because he was hurt, but 7 touchdowns and 5 top 20 PPR weeks in those 12 games. And we just kind of saw everything that I fell in love with him at Penn State, like 4.4 speed that absolutely shows up on the field. Really good route running, really slippery after the catch. And he's got that Tyreek Hill thing going where for a guy who's not that big, like is really good at balls in the air and like contested catches. Like he is just a battler when it comes to like, you know, 50-50 balls with bigger defenders. Like
Jahan Speaking Dotson. Of Marvin Mims.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, good point. And that's exactly right. A lot of people have talked about Mims having those same kind of traits. So I'm fading the situation here. Like, I know people aren't excited about Sam Howell being the week one quarterback for the Commanders. You know, I've got Dotson at like wide receiver 20 or 21 in my dynasty rankings. Like, I just keep moving him up. Like, I'm like, wait, why do I have Treylon Burks ahead of him? Wait, I think I like him more than Terry McLaurin actually. So now I'm just kind of hoping he'll be around for me in the, I'm doing the King's Classic dynasty draft right now, the startup draft. And I'm hoping he'll last me at the end of the sixth round, because I kind of want to get him on that 6-7 turn.
Well, you're not concerned about the Sam Howell to De'Ami Brown UNC connection unfolding?
No, maybe they can bring in Daz Newsome too. And
there you go, Daz.
Oh, man. Yeah, I really like this one because I think Dotson's going to be a big part of if Howell's going to be successful. I mean, obviously you've got Terry McLaurin, but you need that second wide receiver. I think he could very easily be the guy for Sam Howell. So I love this call, Pat. I want to, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a pleasure having you on, getting to laugh at each other a little bit and, you know, kind of crap on each other's takes a little bit and have some fun with it. You know, that's what this is all about. If you're playing fantasy football, you should be having fun with it. And if you get to talk about it all day, you should definitely be having fun with it. Guys, if you're not already, make sure that you are following Pat on Twitter at @Fitz_FF. Again, as always, follow us at FF Dino Diehards on Twitter. You can find us on the Razzball YouTube network. And make sure you're following my co-host, John, at John Helmkamp on Twitter as well. Guys, good luck trading this week, and we will see you next Wednesday. I stay loose, I stay tight. I stay loose, I stay tight. I stay loose, I stay tight.